Okay, we are recording. Ready when you are, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Chuck, will you do a roll call for us, please?
Yes, sir. Jagadasan Krishnamurthy.
Present.
Brian Kirkland.
Present.
Eddie Cook.
Here.
Stuart Brunner for David Byers.
Present.
Ryan Murray.
Present.
John Rome for Lev Gonick.
Present.
J.R. Sloan.
I am here.
Representative Nguyen. And Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
Thanks for joining, Rebecca. Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum of 6 members.
Okay, thanks very much. Welcome everyone to our February edition. I will go ahead and remind folks that this is a public meeting and we do follow the public meeting policy and laws. We do provide the opportunity for comments via our agenda. There's a link that you can fill out to submit a comment if you wish to do so. And our team will disposition those comments. Without anything more there, we'll go ahead and step into our first item of business, which is the approval of the January 18th recording as our minutes from our last session.
Mr. Chairman, this is Stuart. I have to do my usual informing you that I didn't listen to the minutes, so I won't be able to vote on this item.
All right. Thanks, Stuart.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes then.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Do we have a second?
This is Brian, I'll second.
Thank you, Brian. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? I will note Stuart's abstention, and John, I will give you the same probably since you're standing in for Lev. But we'll take that as an affirmative vote from the group then. All right. So we will go ahead and step into the first item we have for review before the committee, and that is the Department of Health Services bringing forward the health and nutrition delivery system project.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Health Services Women, Infant, and Children Program, known as WIC, utilizes the health and nutrition delivery system known as HANDS to provide WIC participants with health and nutrition services along with food benefits via online electronic benefit transfer, EBT, known as EWIC. The HANDS management information system is over 12 years old and requires frequent and costly updates. The HANDS management information system is currently using the .NET framework version 4.8, which is reaching its end of life and is at risk of security vulnerabilities and can only currently be used with one internet browser, Edge, in IE mode. The Arizona WIC program plans to upgrade the current HANDS management information system to HANDS 2.0. The HANDS 2.0 will be upgraded to .NET Core version 6.0 or even later, which will improve user interfaces, upgrade the system architecture, and will be able to function on multiple modern browsers, including Chrome, Firefox, Edge, and more. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Yong Tai. I'm the senior project manager and hand it over to Marlene.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Marlene Hernandez, and I'm the chief of the Bureau of Nutrition and Physical Activity at Department of Health Services.
Thank you. And Paula?
Hi, Paula Mattingly, Chief Information Officer at Department of Health.
All righty. Marlene, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Well, good afternoon again, everybody. Thank you for this opportunity. Haley spoke a little about this. WIC is the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, which is why we call it WIC. It's a lot easier to say. We provide nutrition education, breastfeeding support, supplemental foods, and referrals to health and social services. We serve those who are pregnant, breastfeeding, postpartum, infants, and children up to the age of 5. And so we use hands to enroll them in the program, get them their food benefits so they get loaded to that eWIC card and they can go to the grocery store and buy their foods and be on their merry way. As she mentioned, Hams is now 12 years old and technology ages much more quickly than anything else. So Hams 2.0 will allow us to allow participants to schedule their appointments online. They've been wanting that for a while. It will participants will receive notification when their benefits are about to expire, which can prompt them to remind them to go redeem them and if necessary, schedule an appointment. They'll also be able to receive voice and text message reminders about appointments. Staff will be able to extend the issuance of a breast pump beyond an infant's first birthday without having to call the service desk. So that'll save everybody time and money. And most of all, this will, Hands 2.0 will meet USDA federal requirements. Yeah.
Yes, additionally, one of the primary benefits will be security risk reduction. When we upgrade Hands to Hands 2.0, we'll be able to update the technology stack and it'll mitigate the risk of software becoming end of life and corresponding security vulnerabilities. You know, additionally, Hands only works on one browser, as Haley mentioned, Edge in IE mode. This can become a security risk if Edge becomes end of life in the new future. And by being browser agnostic, will be less likely to be impacted if one of the internet browsers comes end of life. Next slide, please. So the proposed solution is to upgrade Hands to Hands 2.0. We're planning to update the architecture, including the application layer and its tiers to be more efficient. We're planning to modernize the user interface, including making the browser, the application browser agnostic. We're also planning functional enhancements to the different modules, as Marlene mentioned. The implementation, we're planning for a 60-day pilot with one of the Arizona WIC local agencies. The location is going to be determined at a later date. Following the pilot, we're planning to roll out the rest of the state of Arizona through a phased approach through about 8 weeks. Following the Arizona rollout, we're planning to roll out our consortium partners, American Samoa, Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands, District of Columbia, Guam, and Navajo Nation WIC programs. As part of Hands 2.0, we're planning to utilize existing State of Arizona contracts to obtain all the products and services for this project. For professional outside services, we're planning to amend the current contract that we have for the Hands Maintenance and Operations with Currier McCabe & Associates, also known as CMA, to include the Hands 2.0 scope of work. CMA is responsible for the Hands design, development, implementation, and maintenance of Hands 2.0. We're also amending our current contract with Custom Data Processing for the EBT processing and support services to include the scope of work necessary for this project. Additionally, we have a task order in place with Public Consulting Group, who will be our independent verification and validation services contractor. And we're utilizing ARCO for temporary services as part of this project as well. NHS has temporary staff that are working on other projects that will be assigned to Hands 2.0 when the time comes. And lastly, NHS is planning to obtain penetration testing services from the vendor SHI. And NHS will obtain hardware, software licensing services through State of Arizona contractors, Microsoft, CDWG, and SHI as well. Next slide, please. For Hands 2.0, AHS is going to be responsible for project management, the Hands 2.0 infrastructure setup and maintenance, the agency and State of Arizona information security policy compliance, user acceptance testing, and the Arizona local agency training. The vendor is going to be responsible for the Hands 2.0 architecture, user interface design, development, quality assurance testing, DBT environments, and independent verification validation services. The shared responsibility between the agency and our contractors is going to be requirements refinement, the technical documentation, training materials, and technical support. Next slide, please. And this is the timeline of the HANS 2.0 project. Once the project begins, we'll be working on requirements right away. We're expecting that requirements will take place roughly from March 1st when the project starts to June 26, 2023. We're anticipating that development will occur as the individual requirements are signed off, and development we're expecting to be completed by October 31st, 2023. Quality assurance testing can begin as development is completed through the Agile process, and we're expecting that quality assurance testing will be completed in whole January 3rd, 2024. AHS will receive HANS 2.0 for user acceptance testing from January 4th through March 29th of 2024. This includes a period including the user acceptance testing plus obtaining permission to proceed to pilot. We're expecting that pilot's going to take place for 60 days from June 3rd, 2024 through August 2nd, 2024. Following a successful pilot, we're going to put together a pilot evaluation report and submit that to the United States Department of Agriculture, Food and Nutrition Services to receive approval for statewide rollout. We're expecting that statewide rollout will begin October 2024 and conclude December 13th of 2024. We're expecting that after the statewide rollout for Arizona, we're going to complete the consortium partners rollouts, which will take place in January 2025 through April 25th of 2025. And then we're going to complete the invoicing for the project and close it out June 30th of 2025. Next slide, please. Right. For the HANS 2.0 project, there's $11.2 million in development costs in total. FY23 includes $1.4 million. FY24 includes $7.8 million. And FY25 includes $1.9 million. And the breakdown of the development costs include $10.6 million in professional and outside services, includes $7.7 million in HANS contractor, $549,000 for the EBT contractor, $536,000 for IB&V services, $1.8 million for temporary services, and $18,000 for penetration testing. There are also $45,000 in hardware costs, and those include laptops for the project. The software costs are estimated at $37,000 and includes Toad for Oracle and Oracle.Connect software. The licensing and maintenance costs for this project are $306,000, and it includes the AWS Cloud Services, Dynamsoft, and Visual Studio. The other operating expenditures for this project are $168,000. Includes travel, printed training and marketing materials, and shipping. The estimated operating costs for the five-year period for this project is $320,000. It includes $36,000 in FY25, $142,000 in FY26, and $142,000 in FY27. And of the operation costs, $12,000 is for Toad for Oracle software, and $308,000 is for licensing and maintenance, which includes the AWS Cloud Hosting, Visual Studio, and Dynamsoft. Next slide, please.
All right, back to me. Thank you, Young. So all of this money is 100%, all of this project is federally, will be provided by 100% of the funds will be from USDA. They are federal funders. Now, the way USDA works is they can't give us all of this money for a multi-year project at once. So we will get an initial, we have an initial, that 2.6 million you see there at the bottom, we have that initially, and then to be requested eventually over over the next couple of years is the 8.5 million. So USDA, we receive an annual budget every October. They run off of the federal fiscal year. And we have an opportunity to ask for operational adjustments and reallocations every year in January and April. Young mentioned all of our consortium partners. So we also will be USDA, they will be asking USDA to direct some of their funds to Arizona to fund HANS. There's another technology grant that we'll be receiving $2.1 million for. We do have a letter of support from USDA saying they are going to, they support HANS and they will, you know, they can't make any promises, in writing about funding us, you know, year to year, because that depends on Congress passing a budget. But they say most likely, you know, we'll be able to do this. You know, they did it before and they will do it again. Technology is very high in their minds right now. They want to modernize WIC as most as they can. And overseeing, you know, five other states is a big deal to them, and for the hands being in five other states, and then six is Arizona. So they know this is important and they want us to move along. So it will be 100% federally funded. Next slide, please. All right, thank you. So what will success look like after we roll out HANDS 2.0? Well, within a year of the project, something I forgot to mention in the beginning was one other thing we're going to be able to do is when a grocery store wants to become authorized to accept WIC, right now it's a very paper-heavy process. This is going to be automated and it's going to make it easier for them. And so we'll within a year, the vendor application process will be automated for 100% of the grocery stores applying, which I think they're all very excited about. Because filling out all that paperwork, if you have multiple stores, can get burdensome. Within a year, we think 10,000 families will schedule their appointments online using our participant portal. Within 6 months, the number of text messages provided for appointment reminders will be doubled from an average of 35,000 texts each month to 70,000. And then within 6 months, we expect the calls to the WIC service desk to extend that loan for the breast pump for people who want to continue to offer breast milk to their infants after their first birthday will be cut from 35 calls to 17 calls per month. So saving people time and money. Next slide. Here's the question and answer part.
All right. With that, we'll open it up to the committee for questions. Mr. Cook.
I have a question for JR. I know that in the past we had an agenda item on WIC, I believe, and it was to obviously provide some improvement due to probably a older technology or so forth to improve. I guess, you know, I always blame my advanced age for not remembering everything that we see here in the committee. But can someone refresh my memory on the previous agenda item? You know, I don't know, may have been a couple of years ago, I can't remember, of the WIC request versus this request. Are they the same? Are they different? Business processes? I just like to have a read.
Good question, Eddie. I'll turn it over to Chuck. Then, because we've got Paula here and she's got most of the history, she probably has.
Yeah, love to have the history.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Charles Brown, Deputy CIO for Department of Administration. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cook, to answer the question, you've seen a few projects. You saw a WIC to cloud project a short time ago, which is moving infrastructure into the cloud, just like it sounds. You saw an adding of Washington, D.C. to the WIC program a little while ago. So those are the two last times I believe you interacted with this project, but I know Paula Mattingly's here, the CIO, and she can give a little bit more detail about the specifics of those projects.
Hi, I don't have a lot to add. You're right, Chuck. Those are the last two initiatives that have probably been presented over the last couple of years. So WIC, the Washington DC program became another consortium partner along with Guam and Navajo Nation, et cetera. And that was in the last couple of years. And then they're in the process of going to the cloud right now. That's about to be finished.
And Paul, could you add a little flavor around how the previous projects and obviously onboarding somebody is different than maybe the move to the cloud, but that move to the cloud, is that the same system or now refreshing the technology on it, or are these somewhat separate systems?
Oh, these are the HANDS system is the one that is currently being moved to the cloud. So this would be a refresh of that.
Okay.
That set of applications. Young, did you have something to add?
I was going to add that probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I presented a project to incorporate electronic benefit transfer into the hand system as well. That's what Marlene referenced with the EWIC card. So we did upgrade, you know, hands about 6 or 7 years ago to include that technology.
Very good. Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I feel like I was just aged because I remember when we reviewed the EBTE process instead of taking the literal checks. But my question is the timeline rent with the rollout. And I just wanted to know if you could speak a little bit more about how many local agencies do you have to train? Given that maybe it's because I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, I'm thinking like your head is scattered sometimes. So how many do you have to train, and what's the impact going to be to your users and customers when they switch over to this new system?
So Marlene, there's 21 local agencies. That's the current count, right?
Yes, that is the latest and greatest number, 21 local agencies statewide.
So the great thing is we've done this before because we've rolled out hands and we rolled out EWIC, and we've used this identical approach before, and includes, you know, similar training approach where we provide the training to them early and often, you know, have them complete training activities, get familiar with the system. Then when we're on site, we provide like a refresher training, plus we're on site support where we help them while they're using the system during the first week. So if they have any questions, you know, we can assist with that. Plus we have our WIC service desk as well, where if they need any help or have any questions, they can always call and get assistance as well. And so we want to roll out all the Arizona local agencies as quickly as possible to mitigate any risks that we might possibly have, you know, with data migration issues or those kind of things.
All right. I have a question. This is probably for Young and maybe Paula. I heard that it sounded like there was I want to just make sure I'm clear. Are we engaging a third-party vendor to assist with the development, or is that all being done with staff augmentation?
We are using a third-party vendor. It's Courier McCabe and Associates. They're our current vendor that provides the maintenance operations for the hand system. You know, that includes updating the system, fixing bugs, upgrading software, et cetera.
Okay, so thank you for that. Then that leads me into the next one, which is I see we have a maintenance contract with them. You know, right now we only forecast out, you know, across the 5 years. You know, I understand that probably includes, some amount of break fix, as well as security updates. I'm looking ahead to say I don't want to be another 12-year-old system. So how are we? What steps are we taking, or can we take in this process to ensure that we have a system that is sustained over time, and we don't end up with, I'll say, this sizable replacement just purely for technology reasons?
Sure, I can take that one. So so we do have CMA providing the main support. You know, we've got them on contract, you know, with all the optional extensions through July of 2027. So as part of their maintenance agreement, you know, they're required to provide resources to make sure the systems are maintained. AHS prioritizes the work they complete. We dictate, we prioritize the security enhancements, the functional enhancements, fixing the bugs as we see fit to make sure that the systems are maintained. Additionally, as part of the HANS 2.0 project, CMA is going to provide warranty of the system to make sure that they're the system doesn't have many defects. Certainly, we're planning to create a test plan to make sure that they meet the expectations throughout the different phases of the project, you know, through quality assurance testing, through user acceptance testing, so that we receive a high quality product. Or certainly we're not going to move forward into the, you know, further phases of the project.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I know you said that they're going to be doing all of the custom development. Is there any code that's coming over from the existing HANS application? Is this a complete uplift into a new environment? What does that look like?
So they're planning to use the existing hand system, so it won't impact any of the current functionality. So, you know, they're not planning to break any existing functionality to enhance the system. So they're planning to upgrade, the architecture, upgrade the database. So it shouldn't impact the functionality system when they're adding the new features, the new user interface.
So it'll be sort of a slow transition into the new upgraded environment, new upgraded code, all that stuff as part of that transition process.
Right. So right now they're planning to update the architecture on that, and then they're planning to implement all the functional enhancements that we requested on top of that, and then they'll deliver that through the Agile process. Their team will do quality assurance testing and deliver it to us during UAT.
Understood. And just to be clear, that this is hosted in the vendor's AWS environment. Is that correct?
So this is going to be hosted in the AWS commercial cloud. Right now, all the DHS applications are in it's US West 2 in Oregon. And so that's where Hands 2.0 will be as well. We'll have the backup in a different region, likely probably US East in Virginia.
Gotcha.
Also, but for clarity, Young, this is a separate dedicated tenant just for this application. Is that correct? Or is this existing within the broader DHS tenant within that region?
Paula, maybe you could answer that better than I can.
It's in our DHS tenant. Okay. WIC has its own domain. And when we moved to the cloud, we didn't have time to move WIC. And since it was its own domain, it got left at Iron Mountain. That's the current cloud project. So Hands right now is getting moved to the cloud, and then Hands 2.0 will be replacing that.
Okay. And I'm sure you guys have already addressed it in terms of regulatory and compliance issues, being handled within your existing environment as opposed to being forced to adopt GovCloud.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe last thing, Ryan, I don't know if I thought you might be going this direction, but this is a question maybe to Young in terms of the engagement with your third-party developer. Will they be employing any secure development tool sets as they are reviewing the existing code and upgrading it into the new environment? I did see you have pen testing planned, which is good. But I wanted to ask the question if there are any sort of DevSecOps approaches that are being taken.
So we're planning to maintain the Hands application. Hands 2.0, it's all being maintained within our Azure DevOps environment. That's where we plan to maintain all of our requirements, development tasks, all those things. Not sure if that's answering your question or if I missed the question.
That may be a question for follow-up, right? Which is, I'll say it's kind of more of an emerging area, I think, for the state and for custom built applications like this. I think a recommendation that we'll have is that you would consider, just talk with the vendor about it. I understand it may be out of scope for your current engagement, but to consider what tools they might have in their process that ensure they are developing and delivering secure code from the start.
Yeah, I believe I have to follow up with a vendor on that to ensure that they're using tool sets that ensure that the product they deliver meets those security requirements that are expected from the state of Arizona.
Great.
And we have those practices internal, so if they don't, we can pass those along.
Fantastic. Thanks, Paula. All right. Any more for any more? If not, I will turn it back to Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following conditions as presented.
All right, these are kind of our standard conditions. 10% over on either timeline or budget, you get to come back. And then please submit the reports on time. So any questions from the committee on those conditions? If not, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval with the conditions as shown.
Thank you, Stuart. Do we have a second?
This is Jeggy. I'll second.
Thank you, Jeggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Good luck, Young, Marlene, and Paula. Hope it goes well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
We will move forward into our next item, which is Department of Transportation bringing forward the crash records modernization.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael Carpenter. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by the members of the Department of Transportation, who will introduce themselves in a moment after a brief overview of the project. The Department of Transportation is seeking approval to modernize their crash record system. A key mission of the agency is to reduce traffic fatalities and collisions on roadways. This system allows the agency to identify high incident locations and implement potential countermeasures. In 2022, a feasibility study was conducted and a recommendation was made to modernize the existing system to help enhance ADOT's ability to remain in compliance with state and federal law. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you might have.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Michael. Steve West ended up with a conflict, so he is not here today. My name is David Kennedy, and I am the MVM Project Director at ADOT. Don, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Don Logue, and I'm the MVM Project Office Manager at ADOT.
Ben? Ben, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sorry about that, audio issues. Hi, I'm Ben. I'm the security lead for the MVM team.
Great, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Although I do think we are taking some risks here at ADOT by having any IT project with crash in its name. So there are some potential risks to that. So as we move forward, this is a principally an internal system. Doesn't have a lot of stakeholder connection like many of our other applications do. Highly targeted and specific to highway safety. It, of course, is heavily focused on compliance and safety, of course, but also has some operational efficiency byproducts that will come out of it. As you look at the fundamental issues we're addressing, typical of this, you know, we have old aging systems. We aren't being compliant currently with the timelines that are required of us. And it's a very inefficient system from a human resource perspective. One other thing that I will point out that we're doing concurrent with the changeover in the technology that we're suggesting is we've moved the team that supports this from the transportation area into our MBD organization. That enables us to do substantial cross-training so that we can have a much larger pool of people that utilize and can support the system and have better resource coverage and depth. So there's some business changes going along with the technical changes proposed. The benefits, of course, are to, like we said, you know, meet the compliance requirements, of course, move it to a proven platform. Most of our systems that ADOT MVD deployed are all cloud-based Azure government cloud. This would follow that model. We would, of course, we've already been operational for many years with our modernized system on the MVD side. This is simply an extension to that, actually leveraging not only the infrastructure, but a lot of the common foundational code that is part of our MVD modernization system. One of the technologies we'll be attempting to model and see how much value we get out is OCR AI, which will take the about one out of six police reports that are provided to us that are handwritten, not electronically submitted. And we're going to work to take that from a purely manual data entry system into a OCR AI model. If that is successful, we have other uses at ADOT and MVD in particular. And then of course, the whole idea of kind of modernizing some of our internal connections and integration is also important. Next slide, please. This very small diagram is really meant to talk about the boundaries of what we're working on. We are not the systems that typically currently TRACS, which is a system that connects to many of our law enforcement agencies for electronic submission. We're not going to be changing that. So the agencies themselves, the law enforcement agencies, will not have to, this will be fairly transparent to them. Two areas that are out of scope is the area called ACIS, which is where we actually get external parties that have access to some of the safety data and internal users, as well as the predictive analytics that are in the upper right-hand corner. That's the highway safety technologies that we currently use through, business intelligence kinds of delivery and reports and queries, those kind of things. There's a separate project underway to look at ASHTO, or national product that would do the predictive analytics. So the project is completely focused on upgrading the capture, retention, correction of information, as well as the federal reporting of fatal accidents. So next slide, please. Our proposed solution is to, of course, follow a model that we've done over and over with various projects at ADOT. So while it's custom software delivery, it is building on a platform that we have delivered many projects before and many improvements. So we're going to be reusing a bunch of technology, reduces risk and reduces cost. We have integration of data that we never had between transportation systems and MVD systems. Of course, we're going to be modernizing, technology platforms and integration interfaces. One thing we manually have to provide information to NHTSA for our fatal accident reporting. And with this, we can move to an electronic digital connection. I talked about the OCR AI. And of course, the predictive analytics is that second to last bullet. And we won't need, everything we're doing for us is vanilla. There's nothing additional, no additional tools, no additional contracts, engagements, or other complexities from a procurement perspective. So next slide, please. So if we look at who's doing what? Our MVM team that's been doing modernization for MVD for quite some time is the development team for the new crash record solution. Our ITG partners, ADOT, will be doing continue to support the TRACS interface. They already use Esri, which is a product that does geolocation that we use in the highway side of ADOT. They'll be responsible for data conversion and then our ACIS external interface. Like I said before, we're going to be hosting it in the Azure Government Cloud. And again, no new outside vendors, all kind of same players as we've had it for many years here at ADOT. Next slide, please. As you can see, we have about a 15-month schedule, which we would be very surprised if we didn't beat, maybe significantly. So the key thing to notice here is there's quite a bit of work around the, if you want to call it the QA and UAT portion of it. We have a pretty substantial period for that. Even though it's fairly simple, it does require some integration with external federal reporting agencies. So that is why that takes more time than we would normally be required. overall, though, we don't see the we have very little. We don't think there's a lot of project timeline risk on this particular project. Next slide, please. So I won't go through this completely. Just basically, you can see it's less than $1 million in kind of development costs and about $1 million in operations and maintenance and support and cloud. So actually under $1 million on the dev side and then just barely over $1 million on the operational side. So, and next slide, please. And this kind of breaks it down by, so the financial impact again, just under $2 million. We do not need, no budget ask is a part of this. It's all being covered by existing MVD ITG budget and contractual mechanisms. So won't require any state appropriated funding to support. Next slide, please. And finally, what does it take? What would success look like for us? It's we currently have about an 8-month backlog on our fatal accident reporting, and we hope to be able to get that down to 2 months. Again, that's with both technology and operational changes. On the crash side, we will hope to get it from 4 months down to a single month within a year. We hope to reduce from 16% to 12% the number of reports that are submitted on paper. However, that of course requires participation by law enforcement agencies who might find it easier with the new technology to not submit it on paper. Additionally, with we hope that at least have seven, you know, of those that we're handling on paper, that at least 70% of the information will be populated using that OCR AI. It does two things. Not only does it relieve the person from entering the entire police report, but it does enable them with the OCR AI to direct the staff to areas that for their focused attention on correcting. So it's not just an efficiency of work, but it's actually should be a data quality improvement as well. And with that, next slide, please, for the Q&A.
All right, we will open it up to the committee for questions. Dave, you touched on something that I want to just maybe revisit, it sounded like you were starting to say that this system may help, or does it provide an interface for folks that are currently submitting the paper-based reports that they can now do that electronically or
not? They already have several ways that they can submit electronically today. The question often becomes, let me just use an example. There's some jurisdictions that want their reports to have redacted information. In other words, they don't want personally identifying information to be submitted. So the system that we would be building would have features which would enable that to be possible, you know, to have a redacted report. So for example, we have some tribal law enforcement that wouldn't want to participate unless they can submit them in that manner. So there's some changes kind of from a less of a technology shift that could encourage that and more of a capability shift that would enable.
I guess I needed to grow in my understanding of, for those cases where people are doing paper submissions, what is the driver? And it sounds like it's not so much that they don't have the technology available, it's wanting to be able to do some additional things like the redaction.
That it's a little bit of both, but yes.
All right. Other questions from the committee? Mr. Bruner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Always easy to go after data conversion. Mr. Kennedy, can you give me a sense of how that's been estimated, what your approach is going to be on that?
Yeah, we have actually a benefit of two things. One of them is we currently, for most of the information coming in, it goes into our an old on-base database for the visual images of the police reports, which is the bulk of the raw storage that's out there. We will be moving it into blob storage of Azure. We actually get to go through, and the one advantage we have is we still will be, we still retain OnBase. Even in our MVD system, we didn't convert everything. So we left some things in the old technology that are accessible to our staff. So we'll be going through and identifying those things that make sense to fully convert, those things that make sense to leave behind, and those things that make sense to actually eliminate, you know, to do kind of a data purge. So, but because we don't have to convert everything, it does reduce the risk of conversion. Although it is one of the things that we always consider as our highest risk is in data conversion. So, so it'll get quite a bit of attention from our project teams.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions? I will borrow one from the last session, David, asking the question on what are there, what are the tools and processes that this group has in place to ensure secure coding practices?
Ben, I'll allow you to kind of talk through what our environments and what we do on that front.
Yeah, so we're actively building an application security program. We're doing some tools right now and evaluating some others. So that is in progress, but there's also, I would say, extensive network security built into the system and no new infrastructure being leveraged for this. We're going to be using existing vetted APIs and other Azure application services as well just for compliance and for keeping consistent security policies. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you.
And JR, that would be for both. I mean, anything that Ben was discussing is not just for Crash. That's for everything we do, right, at MVD. So
exactly. No, I definitely heard you're leveraging the same team, so I wanted to be able to have folks hear what are the tools and processes you have in place on a broader scale that are being leveraged here. Mr. Brewer, back to you.
Yeah, just another question, Mr. Chairman, out of curiosity. Was there any make or buy analysis done before deciding to do this internally?
Yes, there was. We went through that assessment, an assessment prior to this. On the predictive analytics, there are some good national options available that are used state to state. But on the Crash system itself, there was very little out there that's in the market that is kind of off the shelf solution, which is why we actually made the decision to go ahead and do the build. So, but yes, we did actually bring in an outside vendor that's a transportation specialist, and they went through an assessment of the options. So
great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any more? Hearing none, I will turn it back to you, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. AFSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the conditions as presented.
All right. Again, this is the standard set of conditions. Are there any questions or concerns about it? If not, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
This is Brian. I'll take a move to approve the project with the normal set of stipulations.
Thank you, Brian. Do we have a second?
This is Brian. I'll second.
Here, I'll second.
For the tie, I'm going to give it to, okay, we'll give it to Ryan. poor guy always loses on security anyway. So.
It's payback time.
All right. So with that, we have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any abstentions? All right. That's unanimous vote. Good luck, ADOT team.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, thanks for your time today. All right, we have informational update from the Department of Education.
Yes, that is also me, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, my name is Michael Carpenter. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Education, who will now introduce themselves and provide the committee with an informational update on the overall status of the school finance payment system project.
Looks like you're starting with me. Hi, everyone. Arl Harding. I'm the operations head for the department.
All right. And Beth Neely, chief information officer. We've got Joe Carrillo.
Joe Carrillo, chief technology officer. Thank you.
Ron Nero, director of IT program management.
And Charlie Martin is the deputy associate superintendent. He is the new product owner. Q, that's your account. Thank you. And I believe we have Sudha with us. All right, I don't think Sudha is with us. Sudha is our project manager.
Sudha's there. She was just muted.
All right, next slide, please. So again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here today to provide an update on the progress of the school finance payment system project. One of the good and one of the successful things that we've got going on is the continue to produce the staffer report. We are very excited that we're preparing for the budget in the AFR pilot program in phase three and working through some of the continuous miscellaneous enhancements as we slowly start coming to a close on this great project. Some of the updates and some of the successes is the SDER reports were promoted to production, a wonderful accomplishment for the team. Currently working on the SAFR data sources, preparing for an up and coming deliverable, which is scheduled for the 24th, and another exciting event happening as we prepare for our beta testing. So next slide. For our project health, you can see that the project health is in green. Some of our successes, as I talked about earlier, are the BSA 21 report, the SDER reports, and the compare versions being in, those three are completed. The reports that were delivered, 77, 31, and 31-2, the teachers per district promoted to production. UAT on reports two, scheduled to complete February 15th, that's today. Budget, we are currently okay in our budget. We are green with a spend of $406,000 through the end of January. We are continuing to track two issues and two risks that were identified previously, and that has to do with resources, our technical lead, a maternity leave, and the two active risks are a rework of some development milestones associated with requirements. And the risk that we still carry for a few more weeks, we think, is the exit of Lyle Friesen, the product owner, and his replacement, which is Charlie Martin. Next slide, please. For the financial burn, as I said, we are on track. Spend remaining is $3 million for the remainder of the project. Estimated end date of April 5th, 2024. Something to make note of, the January report. So our variance was a little bit high. It was due from the migration from Knowledge Services to ACRO, and the invoices didn't get created in a timely manner. So that's why you see a variance for January of 2023. You can see that right there in the middle of the screen. But financially, we are green as well. So to review a little bit of our project timeline, next slide, please. So this is kind of a detail of our project timeline. You can see the items in green I had already discussed, which are some of our successes we've had to date. In blue, a couple of the items coming up that we're excited about is preparing for that budget AFR and that beta testing. We'll be doing results-based funding development starting late this month. So that's exciting for the team. That will be coming up. And on the next slide, what we did was we gave you a more high level. So next slide, please. High level of the project until the end. So last time we met, you know, I was asked to give more of a broader picture of everything through the end of the project. I won't go over these in detail, but this is the higher view of the project through April 5th of 2024. And you will again see July 5th in 2023 is when the finance system of phase two actually goes live. So we're excited about that coming up this year as well. So again, the project ends currently on schedule, and that's 4/5/2024. So next slide is questions and answers. If you guys have got anything in particular for me related to the update or my team.
All right, we'll open it up to the committee for any questions or comments on this informational update. Reminder, it's not a voting item. We're just here to get an update on the continued progress of the project. Okay. Must have been an amazing update, Beth. So, congratulations on your continued progress. It's been, a great journey in partnership. I know between DOA and ADE to continue to, make progress on this final phase of development. And you and your team are doing a great job delivering. So keep it up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee. I will see you guys in a few months.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes the content we'll be presenting here today. Committee did receive just a written update on school finance transparency. Chuck, I saw you got your hand up.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to let the committee know with your approval, the next update from education will be written only.
Okay, very good. All right. With that, that concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be March 15th. So you can put that on your calendars and look forward to talking to you all then. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, team, let's go ahead and end the recording. It's 1:59.